Welcome to Season 14 of the Art of Teaching podcast. I'm Matthew Green, and I'm so grateful that you've joined me today. Before we get started with our discussion, I would like to acknowledge the Dharawal people, the traditional custodians of this land on which I'm recording, and pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging. I acknowledge the stories, traditions, and living cultures of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples on this land. Today I have the privilege of sharing an interview that I recently did with the amazing Jackie Vaughan, who is the Foundation Principal of Evelyn Scott School in the Australian Capital Territory. In this conversation, we talked about leadership lessons from heavy metal, re-examining schools, and how to literally build a school from the ground up. It was a privilege to speak with her and to learn from her amazing work and the work that her incredible team are engaged with. I hope that you get as much out of this conversation as I did. Please enjoy. Jackie Vaughan, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for having a chat to me today. Where are you phoning in from? I notice you're outside.
Thank you so much, Matthew. Yes, I'm coming to you from Ngunnawal country, which is Canberra, and specifically Lynham. Yeah.
Fantastic. And what's it like down in beautiful Canberra this side of this time of year?
Yeah, look, it's been a really hot day today, but Yeah, it's been great. We're just coming off the back of a long weekend, camp day. So just reflecting on how lucky we are to live where we do and live and work and play on Ngunnawal country. Yeah.
Fantastic. And Jackie, quite possibly the most important question for our conversation, what is your coffee order? If one I can nip down to.
So I'm a bit of a weirdo. I don't drink coffee in any way.
Right. Shape
or form. I'm a tea drinker. So yeah, Earl Grey, soy milk, one sugar. That's me.
Right. I appreciate that. Earl Grey is I was born in the UK and Earl Grey is my favourite drink. Apparently, traditionally, it's supposed to be drunk without milk, but I can't do that.
No, I don't think
it does. So.
And soy milk as well, you know.
Yeah. And is there a book that you have read recently? It could be within your sphere of expertise in education or that has just caused you to just stop and ponder a few things in your life.
Absolutely. And I am an English teacher by trade, but since becoming a principal over the last 7 or 8 years, it's been quite difficult to go into what I really would love to be reading. So one of the books that I loved to read and I thought other people might find it interesting too is by Alan Reid, 2020. It came out and it's called How Policy is Taking Us Backwards and What Could Be Done About It. So for me, that was a really interesting read, gives a system lens, a national lens, and obviously, yeah, so he's from Uni of South Australia. So, yeah, great to read something from an Australian too.
If anything, this podcast for me is becoming very expensive because every time I speak to someone, I have another that I need to purchase.
Yeah.
Somehow, I think so far I've got away with smuggling book packages into our house and my wife hasn't, she probably, let's be honest. If you could have a dinner party with anybody, your family isn't included in the headcount, but who would you love to sit down with and have a meal?
Oh, look, there's so many people. I think Alan Reid would be one who would be an amazing font of knowledge. But, you know, there's a whole range of other people outside education. We've just watched the Oscars. So people like, you know, a whole range of people who are involved in the arts as well, I think, you know, actors, actresses, so many people. It's very hard to, I'm probably not going to really satisfy that answer very well because there's just so many people, yeah. I think. Yeah.
It's amazing how many times people like Jacinta Ardern and Michelle Obama and
these
people that come up and Yeah, I would find it a really, I'd find it a really difficult question to answer as well, I think, because there's just so many people, and they sort of like, I feel like I have all these relationships with people based on books that I've read, and I feel like I know them and I don't. And yeah, they kind of come in and out of your life. I think it's
And
really.
I'm a big music lover too. So watching, we go and see live bands a lot too. So heavy metal, System of a Down, Tool, that sort of stuff.
Nice.
So, but part of me is like, I don't think you should meet your heroes. I don't, I just think just leave them where they are, learn what you can from what they can give out to the world. Yeah. So,
Tell me about heavy metal though. Like, it doesn't seem like, I mean this respectfully, when I think of a school principal, I don't think of someone who's rocking out to heavy metal. Maybe I need to widen my circles, but tell me about what is it about heavy metal that is particularly appealing? And also, yeah, what are some of those sort of lessons that you think you learned from that?
Okay, this is a rabbit hole. I think because I grew up in the grunge era, so I am a Pearl Jam diehard, Nirvana diehard, that sort of stuff. I think that whole, which is, and then turned into Tool and System of a Down and all of that. I think there is something to be said about questioning authority, thinking for yourself. That really appealed to me as a young person growing up. And so for me, that was really the start of like quite literally re-examining schooling and re-examining things generally, like just because it's always been done that way, should it continue that way? So for me, yeah, I think that's where
Interesting.
my grounding is. Yeah.
It's interesting because the principal, I think, traditionally has been a very authoritative role. And I think about my principals at school, and they weren't going to heavy metal concerts. I think there's something in that, though, isn't there, about really questioning societal norms and expectations and what school is. And it seems, looking back, is it unusual, do you think, that you went into school leadership? Because it seems to be, of course, generally speaking, it seems to be those people that are sort of questioning the status quo don't go back into quite rigid
No,
organizations. How do you explain that?
that's right. I think that's an interesting question because I think obviously I'm Gen X, and so there's a very large part of me that is completely compliant as
Of
well. So,
course. Yeah.
yeah, so there is an element of
You have to be,
absolutely
otherwise.
questioning, yeah, but also thinking, oh, well, how can I make things better? So, yeah, look, I often walk into groups of principals' meetings and think, oh, I wonder if these are my peeps. I'm not sure whether they are, but I've managed over the years to find like-minded people and, done well over the years to gather them around us and me.
Would you say that you have always been like that? Have you always been somebody that has sort of tried to change things and innovate and see new ways of doing things? Or is that something which, as you've got
No,
older, you've kind of grown into a little more?
I think that's again an interesting question. I think because I grew up in the country, I was one of three girls in my class to graduate. It gives you a background of, how can you do things better, but also how can you innovate. All of that stuff is wrapped up in the same thinking. I think I don't know. I think I've always thought about how to do things better, and I've never even actually thought about me being doing something unusual. It's just always the way I've thought. And yeah, so when you say innovate, that's probably a label I haven't really ever attached to myself.
And I think you probably just see it as the normal and right way to do things. Like, it's not anything spectacular.
Not
But
trying to, do anything different.
And as you saw, one of my very strong-minded daughters that I work that I live with, I came in before, and I've got two of them, so I'm sort of surrounded by very strong, independent women in my life. And I was just wondering if you had any kind of parenting advice on how do you make sure you raise kids that do that? Because it is wonderful to have kids questioning everything, but as you saw, it's bedtime now. You need to do as you're told. So how do you kind of find that balance and raise strong, independent women? I don't know. I need some help. My kids are driving me sometimes.
Yeah, look, I don't think I'm one to hand out parenting advice generally, but I think it's very similar to leadership. I think if you absolutely kids need agency and voice and choice, but there comes a time where you as a leader, as a parent, a leader, educational leader, you have to make the hard decisions. And that's what kids will want generally, even though they say they don't. That's absolutely what they want and need. Yeah, so
interesting.
No real advice.
I think it's funny, the older that I get, the more I realize I don't know a lot of things. And so I think it's, I think that's great sage advice not to give any advice, which is really great.
Yes.
So Jackie, for those people that aren't familiar with your career, can you maybe unpack how you got to where you are today and what have been some of those kind of key milestones in your career in terms of education?
Yeah, sure. So this year actually marks my 25th year in education.
Wow.
I know, I just continuously dye my hair. I can't believe actually it's been that long in lots of ways. But I grew up in the country in a little tiny place called Delegat down in New South Wales with a population of 350 people. I think no one would describe me as the outdoors type. I'm not in any way. I couldn't wait to get away. As a tattooed, pierced vegetarian, I gave my parents a whole lot of fodder to talk about. Yeah, so then I tried to get as far away as I could. I went to Newcastle Uni. So that's 8 hours drive from Delegat. And whilst that was in the beginning really difficult, it was an amazing thing for me to do, to be able to get away and experience different life. My first job was at a school here in Canberra called Corwell High School, and then I did a range of different high schools and a college after that, Lake Tuggeranong College. And then after that, I did some work in the Education Directorate. So that really taught me how to write a brief, how to learn how to do government stuff and how to make change from within, which I found quite fascinating. And then I won a position as a principal. My first principalship was principal of flexible education, where we brought together a range of, well, all of the alternative education settings within Canberra. So Murrumbidgee School, which is the school within Bimbridge Youth Justice Centre, the hospital school at Canberra Hospital. I was in charge of the youth support worker program for all ACT schools and a range of other programs, including an alternative program for kids with complex and challenging needs who needed to be in a space outside of their high school. So Mullion, which we named and did all of that from the ground up, that was a really great project to be involved in and to lead.
So
we brought all of those together, put together a really great team. People worked across campuses in all of these flexible education settings. In Victoria, you'd call them flexies. In Canberra, we don't really have a name for them yet. But, that was a really great and very different first principalship, I think.
Think
about it. And then after that, then I got Evelyn Scott School.
Wow. And what was that like when you first stepped into that principalship role? And the reason why I ask is I was just having a conversation with the amazing Dr. Kylie Lipscomb, who works in that sort of middle leader space. And she says that quite often school leaders are woefully underprepared for the jobs they walk into. And I'm paraphrasing her there. Sorry, Kylie. Mm-hmm. But did you feel as if you were prepared for that principalship role, or what was that like in the first couple of days?
Geez, wow, I think it's like parenting, isn't it? I don't think you're ready for any principal role. You just walk in and do what you can.
Yep.
I do think there's things that I still reflect on and use in my second principalship in terms of the things that I hold dear around leadership and around culture. And around, as in workplace culture, and also how to work with teams of people and to get the best out of them and get them to work with you and get that incentive and buy-in. Yeah, so I think in answer to your question, I don't think that there's any there's no professional learning that's really going to be able to adequately prepare people. I think there's something that has to be within you. I think there's also, I remember a great leader one time told me that there's a difference between bravery and boldness. And I thought that was a really great thing because, you know, you can be bold and tell people what you're going to do and what you're going to say and, you know, how you're going to operate. But if you don't have the bravery to back that up, then you're really not the courageous leader that you think you might have been. So I always remember that. And for me, particularly in that position, which required me to speak to and work with a range of different stakeholders, you can imagine that mm-hmm. the difference in each of those spaces, hospital staff, you know, people in juvenile justice, that was an amazing experience getting to know how to navigate that world. And it is such a different world to what we do in mainstream schools.
And what do you think, Jackie, are some of those components of leadership that you find relatively easy or you feel particularly competent in? And I feel like this is a job interview. It's not. and also, what are some of those areas that you felt like you had to kind of work on?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I've just been doing some great work with Dr. Tim Patston, who's done a whole range of work. You may know his work in creative leadership, and speaking with him around the idea of being, and this is something I recognize in myself, being a bit of a perfectionist. And, you know, he's talking about the idea you can be a maladaptive perfectionist or an adaptive perfectionist. So I'm working towards the adaptive perfectionist end. So that idea of being clear about your vision, but being able to understand that things are going to go wrong and then be able to step back and look at things objectively. So that's probably what I'm working on.
Yeah.
I think I'll work on that for the rest of my career.
Yeah.
Because I want things to be amazing all the time. I think, and I don't know whether I'm completely alone in that. I think there's a lot of people who want that perfectionism, but then I think there are some people who also really like the idea of and understand that idea of just being in cruise control a little bit. You know, it's okay to be in cruise control, and that's what I actually have to learn.
Yeah.
The things that I probably do well and understand is that I think there's got to be a strong vision. People want that from you. No one wants an anxious leader. No one wants someone who is a little bit wishy-washy and you know, prone to switching around to different things. So I think I've done that quite well over the years. And certainly at a foundation school, that's really important because you can give staff, I believe, too many shiny things, and that just confuses your messaging. And then you can actually give yourself, I think, educational ADD where you're just confusing everything and everyone. So, yeah, I think I'm quite good at that vision and that messaging. And I learnt a lot about that in this role, particularly at the beginning.
So in a foundation school, which is the school that you're in now, is that correct?
Yes.
So you're starting that from the ground up, basically. Yes. How do you determine what is right for your school? Because, I mean, I've got a bookcase full of books of great ideas and stuff I should be doing, and there's almost too much professional learning. So how do you step back as a leader and go, this is what is right for our school, our context? Because I don't know about you, but when I try and do more than three things at a time, I end up doing a lot badly. So how do you kind of work out what steps to take?
Yeah, so this is something that has changed now due to my feedback and others too. In ACT now, you should be given as a foundation principal at least a year to work on your school development as a foundation principal. I was given term, so it was really a very short period of time. But having said that, I used it really I think quite wisely, because I'd come off the back of being a principal where you're just run. And so coming into a position where you're sitting and thinking and stopping was completely different for me. So having all that time felt like an amazing thing. So I sat for the first, it was 2 weeks solidly, which again doesn't seem like a lot of time.
It's a long time.
Hindsight, I know. But when you have no kids to follow up on, no parents, none of that busyness, and you're sitting in a room with just a blank sheet of paper, yeah, you're right. It is a long period of time. So I worked with Lee Crockett, who has done a great deal of work in this space, and came up with three words which I still use for our school. So we are a contemporary school, we are a connected P-10 school, and we work with our community. So those three pillars were something that I fleshed out, but as an overthinker and overanalyzer, I realized I had to be really careful about not accidentally diluting the message by going too deep too quickly. So in actual fact, for me, having that time, if I had had more time, I probably would have overthought it. So sticking with those three pillars, looking at messaging, looking at branding, and then working with Lee, working with others to think about, well, what do I actually want? Because essentially, when you're a foundation principal, when you're handed that gift, and it is a gift, you've got two choices. You can transfer the same old that you've had across your career because you know it works, it's safe, and then you can call it a new school within a new school building, or you can start from scratch and actually really think about every decision. And that is the choice I made, and I know that that's the harder choice, but I felt that that's what, oh, this will sound very hallmarky, but that is actually what was important for the community and what was important for the new school, and I didn't want to waste that opportunity. Yeah. So that's what I did, and we now have it is a privilege, absolutely. So we now have this really clear future-focused learning continuum, which starts with play-based learning in the preschool. We move to inquiry-based learning in the primary school, and then we have project-based learning in the high school. So for me, that's a really clear continuum. I know that inquiry, particularly inquiry, well, all of those terms have had a bashing, you know, in the media over the last few years, but I think doing those well and with academic rigor is really what I am holding on to, and I won't move from that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, Jackie, I have so many questions. What does success look like at your school?
So we are very lucky in the ACT because we have an incredibly progressive visionary framework called the ACT Future of Education Strategy. So we really have an amazing, you know, we do, an amazing, amazing education minister who set up a really big conversation with community 5 years ago. So we're now 5 years into that strategy. So for me, the third year of that strategy implementation. So for me, it was really great because I could actually say locally, this is what our strategy is saying. This is how we're going to operationalize it at our school, because we have this authorizing environment to go with. We also have an overwhelming body of research, you know, nationally and internationally to draw from to say that this is the way we should move forward. The education that you and I had, I am much older than you. So the work that, you know, the education that I had,
yeah,
it doesn't serve our kids. We should be a profession that is adaptive and flexible, and we need to look at where we should go from here. And we need to look at, that starts with personalized learning. Mm-hmm. So personalized learning is a core component of the ACT Future of Education Strategy. So for me, that was really a no-brainer to connect what we were doing to this, because I deeply believe in that. In terms of success, you know, criteria and how we look at measuring that, obviously as a new school you have to wait for a little bit of time before some results can be, you know, can be authentically measured, I'm going to say. But what we have done is put together a really robust graduate profile of all the things that we want for our Year 10s to have. And we, you know, we put together a really great visual of our learners from preschool right through to Year 10. And we really visualized what do we want our Year 10s to have by the end of their time with us at Evelyn Scott School. And largely it's skills based. Largely it's around future skills and things like critical thinking and creativity and being a collaborator and, you know, all of those soft skills, which are now the hard skills of our time.
It's so refreshing, Jackie, seeing or just hearing what you're doing in the ACT, because we, of course, have a national curriculum and we, of course, have all of those qualities, those outcomes in New South Wales, but it's really wonderful to actually hear a school where they are deeply embedded into practice, and not just something we just talked about. And I'm assuming you're familiar with the amazing Stephanie McConnell at Lynfield Learning Village. I have had her on a couple of times, and every time I speak to her, I'm just in awe of the amazing work that she's doing. And it's so refreshing to me because, and to hear your story and the story of your school, because it is possible. Like, it can be done. We are all working, many of us, in the same system with the same restraints, with the same public opinion and challenges and low socioeconomic students and all of that stuff. But it absolutely is possible.
Absolutely, absolutely. And can I just say, I am quite in awe of Stephanie as well. I think what she has done at Lynfield Learning Village is amazing. I'd love to go visit. Just haven't been able to since, you know, as a We literally were dealing with mounds of dirt over the last few years. So we actually do have one of her teachers. She's moved to Canberra, and because so the connection there is already there, and our teacher reached out to us and said, "I want to work at your school." So, you know, that national connection I think is really great to have of like-minded people, and really necessary.
Yeah. I love that. And Jackie, you talked about how the role of schools has changed since when you were at school and when I was at school. And how has the role of the principal shifted?
Well, I can only speak about, because I'm one of those boring people who've gone to school, uni, and then school. So I can't speak about other professions, having not done another profession. But I can say that I know that the principal's role, absolutely, I agree with you, Matthew, has significantly shifted over the last few years. And I think I was talking to a colleague the other day, and she was saying that instead of howling at the wind about, you know, things like infrastructure shouldn't be part of our job, well, it actually is. So we just need to get on with it. And being a foundation principal, I think, has really set me up well. Great experience, because I've always been talking about, you know, things like our learning design and how our learning spaces operate, as well as things like the toilets flushing and, you know, all of that stuff as well. So you actually have to be across all of that stuff. And so the business infrastructure and governance side of things has really shifted. The things like autonomy, which sounds like a great thing, but when you're left swinging in the wind sometimes can be quite a scary situation. Obviously, we have a really supportive directorate and supportive colleagues and all of that, you know, to support you, that's totally fine. I think I'm just saying that accountability and autonomy is like a double-edged sword, I think, and that's absolutely, that's something that we struggle with. Well, I certainly struggle with as a principal.
I can see why. You're shoveling piles of dirt whilst trying to work out your strategic directions and priorities. I think it would be a huge privilege, but a really challenging role. And Jackie, how do you engage your community? I mean, you talked about one of your pillars being community focused. What does that look like in your school, and how have you gone about taking your community on the journey with you?
Yeah, so we are really privileged to have an entirely multicultural school community. So last figures, and this always changes because as a new school, we always have people moving in, and our student population numbers change significantly day to day, week to week, day to day. So last figures, we had around about 39 countries represented in our school, which is, and our school population at the moment is 662. So, you know, close to 700. Not huge yet. Capacity for 1,400, but we will reach that slowly because of the construction rate around us, and 47% EALD. So, yeah, it is. Yeah. So, and we don't expect that to change, even though, you know, people, as people move into the community. So it's a huge privilege, and it's also a big opportunity to work with community. And so I think the best way to say it is that we just work with, not do to, I think is our best philosophy, really. So right at the beginning when we started in 2021, when we had about 100 kids, we met with every single family. So, and that probably doesn't seem like a lot, but there was only two or three of us. So that was a lot of interviews to have at the beginning. And yeah, we just work with, and lots of conversations.
Yeah.
We had last year, we had a future focused learning meeting where we sat down with our community and ran them through the process. This is what a global concept looks like. This is achievement standard. This is how we do our process or our learning model at Evelyn Scott School from primary right through to high school.
Amazing.
From preschool right through to high school, I should say. Yeah. So. Yeah.
What were some of those questions, if you don't mind me prying a little bit, that you asked families when you sat down with them?
Oh, yeah.
They came into your school.
Yeah, so testing the memory banks. But we do still do that. We still meet with every single new enrolment. It's just not me all the time now. I'm happy to have a bigger team. So generally it was along the lines around the personalized learning. So what can you tell me about your child? Parents love to tell you all about their children, and I think it was really great to give people that opportunity. Yeah, so it was the standard questions. Yeah, how can we work together? Do you have any special religious events or celebrations that you celebrate? Yeah, things like that. But we found that to be a really great rapport building process.
And you mentioned, Jackie, that your team has expanded. Obviously, you can't be doing all of that with 600 or so children. But how have you built that capacity in your team? And is it difficult? Because I'm assuming when the school has 100 students in it, you can kind of control the whole puzzle. You know, you there's a lot more. You can kind of hold on to things a lot more. But I would imagine as you grow as a school and grow as a team, you have to sort of strategically release certain responsibilities to people. I mean, how have you built your team, and how have you made sure that everyone's kind of moving in the right direction?
Yeah. So essentially, to start out with, I brought along a lot of my colleagues who I'd worked with in range of different settings over the past, 20 years. And it was great for them. They all said yes, thankfully. So that was great to bring along like-minded people. That's a great base. And then over time, and it's weird to say that we are now in our fourth year, we've worked on a distributed leadership model. So now we are at a space where I feel that I can leave the school and do a meeting or a day out or, you know, with the education directorate or professional learning without feeling like I need to be there all the time. So just building that distributed leadership model cleverly, putting robust processes in place. I know I'm a bit of an organizational freak, but that's also been very helpful along the way. Systems, processes, procedures, and just having amazingly competent people around me to do that and to trust them, to do the work, I think, is a really, really important thing. Because if you, well, we all know how important professional trust is and psychological safety, that building well-being and building a really great workplace culture, that's my job.
Yeah.
My job is to do that from the beginning. My job, and I think it's a different thing to being responsible for everyone's happiness or joy. That's not my job. My job is to build a really positive workplace culture so people feel like they love coming to work every day. Yeah.
How do you make sure you kind of keep your eyes on the day-to-day, the jobs that absolutely have to get done, your policies, your procedures, your who's covering what class and all of this stuff, what outcomes you're addressing, but also have the time and the capacity to look into the future? So that idea of keeping your eyes on the horizon, how do you do both? Because I'm great at coming up with all these ideas and all this stuff, but I really struggle sometimes with how are we going to get there? I don't know. So how do you do both as a school leader? And is it something that you've had to kind of develop?
Yeah, I think, like I said before, I know I am an organisational freak and I drive my husband, you know, crazy about that a lot, and my kids. But essentially, having all of those really great time management skills in place, that's really basic and boring, I know. But we talk about this at Leadership all the time. And what we do is we carve out between the weeks, every week we do operational meetings. Every second week we do our own leadership PLC. So that's the time where we carve out an hour every fortnight, which really doesn't seem like a lot of time, but that's where we do our strategic thinking and our strategic doing. So this is in consultation with Lee Crockett, because he talks about organizational stuff as well. Destinations, milestones, footsteps. So where do you want to go? What are the two things that are going to really show you that you have been successful? And then in the past tense, and then the footsteps, who's going to do what and when? So that has really been, I know that again sounds quite basic, but that for me has, as a team, has been amazing in collective self-efficacy, because when you get one of those DMFs done, people just feel so productive.
And I'm totally geeking out on this. I think this is, I love this stuff. I remember reading a classic many years ago called Getting Things Done by David Allen, and then emailing him and saying, David, I'm just this random guy from Australia, can I please interview you? And it blew my mind that he said yes. Jackie, what does that sort of practically look like for you, though, in your day-to-day? Like, do you have anything, like, for example, do you keep your phone on do not disturb until 8 o'clock in the morning? Do you not have emails on your phone? What do you do? What does it look like for you? And how do you create that space so that you can think?
Yeah, making space for being organized. It's a difficult one. I think I've got an online to-do list app, which is really good, and it tracks my productivity. I know that Fridays are the most productive day of the week for me because of that little app. But
what that app is?
Oh, Todoist. It's called.
Oh, perfect. I have that. It's one of my favorite apps.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's that thing about doing 3 to 5 things a day, and they don't include little tiny things like, you know, if you're a teacher marking a role, that's obviously going to happen. But it's the, what do I need today to get closer to my destination? So there's never a time where we don't have an active destination, milestones, footsteps in place. So I've always got something to do strategically. Day to day, it really, you have your Todoist app, which is beautiful at 6 a.m. in the morning. But, you know, but then when you get to school, things happen. So you actually need to be realistic about goal setting. I've got these things to get through, and if I get 3 to 5 things done today, I'm going to be really excited with myself. Yeah, and then you know that there is going to be behaviour management to happen, there's going to be teachers to talk to, there's going to be a range of things that you need to do.
How do you create time then for what's important for you outside of school? Because you mentioned you're a heavy metal So honestly, though, most people, Jackie, would run a school, come home, watch TV, and that's it. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want. But how do you create time for stuff that is really important to you?
It is difficult. This is where I mentioned my husband's a principal as well. So, yeah, so this is, it's a busy old time, and I think in our household. So we have our tween and our teenager who need us, and I think that's our big priority. So it's about focusing on them, focusing on each other, and focusing on a little bit of harmony at home, which is not easy all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then taking some time to do the cool, you know, the cool things that you want to do, which is go and listen to a band every now and then, live music or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not in any way going to say that I am a poster child for principal wellbeing, because it is a very difficult job, and you want to, and done well, very difficult, very difficult. And the only advice is to be around like-minded people as much as possible, because it can be a lonely job, and you can find yourself, and I've, you know, you can find yourself talking to the wrong people about the wrong things, and that is not helpful. So you have to, I try very hard to maintain a sense of, you know, a professionalism about who I speak with and who I, you know, yeah, talk to about stuff that I need.
You also need that. Like, you need those. Like, you can phone up and go, oh my gosh, you'll never believe this. Or because it's a sort of like, I mean, I have that with a dear friend of mine who's not a teacher, but I've got a bit of a commute to get to work. And so for me, that 45 minutes, I usually phone him because I realize my wife doesn't want to know. Or it's probably not respectful to lump it onto her. And so to have some way to kind of transition from work to home, as Adam Fraser says, that sort of third space, like being able to transition from one thing to the next, because I kind of felt it sort of everything bled into each other for a long time, and I don't think that was particularly helpful for anyone.
No, and that head full of noise is really not a great thing to, and so I have a bit of a commute to, not, we're in Canberra, right, so it's nothing.
5 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a lot. Yeah, so but having that commute, that quiet time, that alone time, and then being able to say, righto, kids, tell me about your day, has made a difference.
Yeah.
But then I'm one of those people, I just get super excited about the next thing, and, you know, speaking to people like Dr. Fiona Young and Dr. Devon Tuckwell, and, you know, those people are just, that's what gives me energy, because then I think about all the great things we can do together. So yeah, that's I'm really proud of that work that we've started last year.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. And I'll make sure that I put links to all of that great stuff that you're doing with your school in the show notes, so people can connect with you, because there is no way that we can possibly talk about everything in the space of a short podcast. But I did want to be respectful of your time, and speaking about balance and having a life outside of school, I am aware this is a school night, so I do want to be respectful of that. If I was sitting down having a cup of Earl Grey with you with soy milk, just about to step into the classroom for the first time, what advice would you give me as a recent graduate?
This is something I think I've carried around with me for a long, long time, probably since my first year. I remember someone great and wonderful, one of my first principals, telling me that it is sacred ground that you're being allowed into. It is without doubt the most noble profession. It's a privilege to work with children and young people. I have just recently in this job worked very closely with the youngest learners. So working with preschoolers and right up to year six for me has been a new privilege. And so that's what I'd say to teachers starting out. And I spoke at an AEU conference for new educators only last week, actually. And we spoke about that. It is a noble profession. It is a privilege. And it's one of those most amazing jobs. And if you can you know, wake up every morning and love it because you are doing good and you are helping and working in a real service industry. Yeah, I think that's something to be proud of and something that you can go to sleep every night and be proud of the work that you've done.
Mm. I've been thinking about that word a lot, actually, about the privilege of our profession. Mm. And I think we have to get back to remembering that. Like, we need to remember that every day in my school, and same as your school, there are hundreds and hundreds of parents that kiss their kids goodbye and expect us to do a good job.
Exactly. And it's trust, isn't it, right? We trust. And as parents, you know what that's like to trust.
And I didn't fully understand it until I walked my daughter in for her first day of kindy and I just handed her over and I thought, wow, like, yeah, I got it. I think I got it then.
Yeah.
There's a lot of noise around the work that teachers do, a lot of politics around schools, but I think getting back to that privilege of what we get to do is so important. And if I was someone who was about to step into a role as a school principal, would the advice be similar?
Oh, you're asking me to give out a lot of advice today.
there's a lot of advice, yeah.
Yeah, look, I think you have to love it. There's been days where I've come home and I've thought, oh, I need to find another job. And then that only lasts for a day or two, you know, and then I realize actually that's just stress talking. There is no greater job. And being a principal is, yeah, it's hard to find the words specifically, but generally it's one of those things where you have such responsibility, such autonomy.
Yeah.
It's a great thing. And so, you know, that's scary at times, but if you can find the bravery and that vision, what do you want to do with your school? What is it that you want to do? And really go and find that and work with that and get that right, I think is for me the greatest challenge. And I am someone who not in any way saying that I've got it perfect or that it is completely right. But we have a very clear and ambitious goal and a really we've set the pathway out in front of us. So yeah.
Jack, it has been an absolute privilege to get to speak to you. And thank you for giving me a few moments of your time, like I said, on a school night. And just to hear the great things that you're doing in your school is hugely inspirational. And I can't thank you enough for your time this evening.
Thank you so much. I hope I made some sense in some areas. Thank you so much, Matthew.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the podcast episode today. It's a privilege to get to share these conversations with you and continue to invest into our incredible profession. If you have a few moments, please do me a favor and leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or through whichever platform you're listening today. If you wouldn't mind also hitting the subscribe button and sharing it with your networks, it would really help to get the word out to as many educators as possible. There are different ways to connect in the notes below, including links to the website, the Facebook group, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you again for taking the time to listen. It means the world.